SATs, essays, interviews, and the prospect of sky-high tuition. Applying for and getting into college these days is no small undertaking. For high school students and their parents, we are now in high-stress season. It's college application time, and the whole process leads to a lot of anxiety. From a seemingly earlier and earlier age, students are told to pump up their resume, to show leadership, participate in sports, serve the community, all while getting good grades and SAT scores. In theory, this is supposed to help the college-bound student get into the college or university of their dreams. But is that the reality? I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll hear from some experts on demystifying the college admissions process. We'll also examine how anyone can even afford the cost of higher education. Joining me in the studio, Bowdoin College Director of Admissions Whitney Soule, University of Maine Augusta's Vice President of Enrollment Services John Henry, and Scarborough High School Senior Placement Counselor Robin Larry. This is Maine calling.
I'd like to begin today's conversation with an email we got before the program here. It says, as the parent of two successful college students, one senior and one freshman, I have experienced the changes in college admissions firsthand over the past 4 years. The complexity of the process has increased exponentially in that time, and so has the needed research time and expense of the visits. Many colleges now expect 17 and 18-year-olds to have amassed achievements and thought out their lives in ways which few 30-year-olds have done. It's hardly surprising that my son's classmates, baffled by the maze of applications and competing requirements, discouraged by what they see as a shrinking list of possibilities and fear of crushing debt load, are largely unhappy with their limited choices and the eventual outcome of their search. That sounds pretty grim. Whitney Soule, Bowdoin College Director of Admissions. Does that fairly characterize the college admissions process over the past 4 years?
I do think that sounds grim, and I think it's a reflection of the anxiety that is so present around high schoolers who are applying to college and the pressure they feel about what their college admission says about them and their successes. But the truth is that I don't know that it takes tremendous expense to do research about good college fit, and I don't know that students need to go searching for activities that they think will be special in the college admissions process.
Does this get does this get perpetuated by the media, or how do we come to still believe that this is getting out of control in terms of having to apply to so many schools and to, you know, open an orphanage in Malawi in order to even get a look from a college?
I think that That anxiety travels pretty easily among students, connecting dots that seem to create a straight line about what gets somebody into college and what doesn't. And they may look at a classmate who has had some amazing extracurricular experiences and assume that that's the reason a student was admitted. Or that a student who looked at 20 different colleges and visited them all and went back and interviewed with them, that made the difference in the college admissions process. Although what I would say is that when it comes to us as admissions officers reviewing academic material and extracurricular material, that it really comes down to if a student is passionate, their extracurricular activities will come naturally to them because those are their passions, and they won't mind the amount of time that they're spending pursuing those activities. They don't need to go find special ones that they think will be special for an admissions office with people whom they've never met reviewing those activities.
John Henry at UMaine Augusta, what are you seeing from students? Are they filled with anxiety and jumping through hoops?
You know, it's interesting. We've got we've got the two ends of the bell curve here today with Bowdoin, which is very selective, you know, highly regarded for centuries, and UMA, which is only 45 years old. And we're a more access-oriented institution. So the anxieties that our students bring to the process that we typically see are different. We see first-generation families who don't have the full information about what it takes to enroll, the multitude of paperwork for financial aid and admissions. So it's a different story. I think what's pushing some of this pressure regionally and nationally is this notion of a college degree as a brand, and that you need this pedigree to advance your life. And what does that mean? I think the Occupy movement has actually begun to challenge this. You know, people leaving with some debt and worried about that, wondering, is my investment going to pay off in the end. But we're seeing some of that, but we see issues of readiness, really. And readiness isn't just academic readiness, but financial readiness and social-emotional readiness. Are the students getting support from their families and their communities to come to college? So there's another piece to that.
To join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. You can send us a tweet, @MaineCalling, or leave us a message on Facebook. So many options today. Let's go to Scarborough High School, where Robin Larry is a senior placement counselor. Are the kids coming into your office feeling more anxiety today than they did 4 years ago or 10 years ago?
I wouldn't say markedly, no. It's always been a stressful process, but I think as soon as they start to get into the process and sort through the different types of schools that are out there, feel more informed, the anxiety starts to diminish naturally. And I think stressing with them and hearing this from other admissions professionals, making sure they set themselves up to have a number of options at the end of this can reduce the anxiety as well.
Do you sense that they are concerned, though, about their resume, that when they walk into a college interview, mm-hmm. that there should be some extracurricular activities on there if they are to have success in this process?
Some are, and I think they're reassured knowing that, as Whitney said, it's colleges looking for something they're passionate about versus being involved in a broad spectrum or a very elevated number. And that's playing itself out. Our students are certainly seeing amongst themselves that those that have had only a couple of activities, but they've been involved with them at a deeper level for a long time, have certainly had some wonderful options from selective schools.
Whitney, at Bowdoin, does Bowdoin really care whether someone is, head of the camera club? Well, I guess there's no camera clubs. it would be the smartphone club, I guess, now. But how important is it for a student coming in, applying to Bowdoin, to have a list of things that they've achieved outside of academics?
I think that's an excellent question. And I think what we're really looking for when we're reviewing students' activities and in the concept of leadership is that students are looking for ways of advancing in their interests. And there are some activities where working your way toward a leadership position is a demonstration of some expertise in that area of leadership qualities among your peers, a passionate interest in that activity. And there are some activities where moving toward a leadership position isn't a natural direction within that particular activity, and we recognize a student's commitment in leadership and ability by the depth of the activity. And so I think whether or not there is a leadership moniker of being a captain or the president or the co-president, that is not always the most important thing, as it is really understanding what that student's participation has been in the activity and how that student relates to their peer group.
And would you rather see someone who, had an enormous butterfly collection or a whole list of achievements that someone has done? In other words, is it more compelling to you to see a student who's really engaged in a single interest or a whole laundry list?
That's a question that we get a lot from students and from parents, and I understand the question, absolutely, but I think it's a hard one for us to answer because where the activities play in and whether it's a singular activity that's unusual or has a lot of depth or whether it's a broad list, how appealing that is has very much to do with the whole person in that application. And that the decision isn't made around what the list of activities looks like. For us, the decision really is made about the personality that really comes through every piece of the application, about the student's learning interests, their learning style, and how well we think they would fit into the learning community of Bowdoin.
1-800-399-3566, the number to call. Email talk@mpbn.net. or tweet us @MaineCalling. And, of course, there's Facebook. How much of this has to do with a real, increase in competition versus a phenomenon of kids simply applying to a whole lot of schools to hedge their bets? In other words, is it driven by the applications, or is it really driven by true increased competition? Anybody?
I'll say from my perspective, certainly the increase in numbers of applications out there. There are just wonderful students that can find a whole slew of colleges that would be great fits for them. But I think a lot of the anxiety comes around the admission rates at schools and students sending out more and more applications to address that issue. And then the reality that colleges only have a certain number of slots. So it can come down to a numbers issue.
So do you advise students to hedge their bets by applying to lots of schools? Or do you say, pick the schools that you're really interested in and focus on those?
Somewhat of a blend. Certainly not increasing the number of applications exponentially, but identifying schools that they would certainly be interested in applying to and making sure it's a solid mix of schools. So on the other end, they have options that they're not focusing in on one particular type of school and applying only to that type of school, that they have a good mix.
John Henry, at your school, are you looking for liberal arts candidates in the same way that, you know, that Bowdoin is, or are you looking for students who are looking for a specific, you know, track of education, a more narrow, I guess, focus?
It's a great question. I think when the University of Maine at Augusta was founded to provide access to students. So most of our programs are related to a career or profession. We certainly have liberal arts and sciences as well. And we have some students who do come in unsure, undeclared, they're pursuing English or liberal studies. Also know that some of our students aren't 18. They're 20 and 30 and 40 years old, and they're coming back to finish a degree. So one of our most popular programs in liberal arts is liberal studies, which is sort of a compiling degree. They can use the life experience. But we surely have a large number of professional programs, and students who are coming to a place like Augusta or another university in the system are perhaps looking at a professional program as well, business, criminal justice, you know, connecting it to a main career that really tends to drive students to a place like UMA.
1-800-399-3566, the number to call to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Let's break down some of the elements of the application process. And I want to start with the SAT. When I applied to Bowdoin back during the Carter administration, I think even then the SAT was not a requirement. Is the SAT still not an important part of, I don't want to characterize it, but how would you characterize the importance of SAT or other test scores at Bowdoin?
At Bowdoin, so this answer is for Bowdoin in particular, and Bowdoin was the first school to remove the requirement of SATs as part of the admission process, and that was when Dick Moll was dean, even before when you had applied. And we don't require that students submit standardized testing to Bowdoin because the way that our admission process works and our review process, there are enough other elements for academic review where we feel like we can get a pretty strong sense of the student as a learner and what their potential might be in our community without having to have the SATs present for us to be able to make an evaluation and move on with the decision. That said, if students do submit their scores, we do use them. I think lots of times score options or score choice on the college's side is interpreted as that school doesn't care about scores, they don't require them. And what we really try to clarify is that we're giving the student the choice about whether or not the scores matter. So if a student chooses to send their scores to Bowdoin, they do matter, we're using them. It's a student offering us a piece of information that they would like to have reviewed. So we do remind students to think carefully about whether or not they would want to have their scores included in their application to Bowdoin College. Mm-hmm. But they're not at a disadvantage for choosing to withhold them. And I think that's something that a lot of students worry about, that they don't believe us that it's optional, and that if they don't send them, that we're going to assume that they're very poor scores and attach something negative to their application. And the truth is we're able to just move on without that piece of optional information.
John Henry, are SAT scores important at UMaine Augusta?
Not at Augusta. We don't even require them either for different reasons. As part of our access mission, we require students, many of them, to engage in a placement testing process so that if someone does submit them, we look at them and it can often mean they're waived from certain courses or developmental coursework. But some of the campuses in the system surely do. And it can make a difference in a scholarship consideration, and it has that value. And it is one piece of the process. It is not, I think they do get too much attention. In fact, the SAT has changed its name a number of times over the decades to reflect this evolving role of what the SAT is or what it ought to be in the process. In fact, it is academic work that is still the number one most important piece of what a student brings to the process, what she or he has done over 4 years.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Send us an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page. And while you're there, friend us or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
The last time an eastern cougar or mountain lion was shot and killed in Maine was 1938, and the eastern cougar has been declared extinct. Yet hundreds of people believe they've seen them. This week on Maine Watch, we'll meet a couple of those people, and we'll talk with U.S. Fish and Wildlife expert Mark McCullough. Plus, we'll meet some local filmmakers whose newest movie is doing really well in international festivals. We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow night at 9 on MPBN television, as well as tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN member support and by Husson University, committed to strong leadership through education with graduate study in criminal justice administration. Details at husson.edu. And by the Clean Bedroom, organic mattress showroom in Kittery, Maine, using organic and sustainable materials, now at Furniture of Portland and online at thecleanbedroom.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about the college application process. Our guests, Whitney Soule, Bowdoin College Director of Admissions, John Henry, Vice President of Enrollment Services at the University of Maine Augusta, and Robin Larry, Senior Placement Counselor at Scarborough High School. And I want to go to you, Robin, to follow up on the SAT question. Is there anxiety about the SAT? Is it a central part of the admissions process from the student's point of view?
Definitely. Definitely one of the greatest sources of anxiety for students and families. As Whitney said, Bowdoin and many other schools don't require standardized test scores. It is optional. What we try to make sure students hear in this process is that it's optional. If they do choose to submit them, though, it needs to be an informed decision. Colleges will then look at them. So they need to make sure that submitting their scores adds value to their application. And then the piece about the being a part of the evaluation for scholarships, often with some merit scholarships, standardized test scores can be a component in determining eligibility for scholarships. So we're trying to emphasize with students to take the test seriously, even if they are not a strong test taker, to give it their best shot, consider retaking them. Most students do retake them so that if they're needed for scholarship purposes, and not admission, they still have their best.
And we're hearing about parents laying out a lot of money for tutors to help their kids improve on SAT scores. Do you recommend that for certain students?
I certainly provide the information to students and let families make that decision on their own. I don't advocate either way. Certainly, students should prepare for them, whether it's on their own or through a prep course. They can certainly increase their chances of improving their scores by prepping for them. And I think one of the benefits of prepping, if not in test-taking strategies and skills, more in the confidence of being ready for the exam.
Another important part of this, of course, is the, I think it is, it's been a long time, the essay. This is a chance for you to show yourself and your thoughts and your writing abilities. Whitney, is that still important at Bowdoin?
It's very important at Bowdoin, and you know, we're right in the thick right now of reading applications for next year's fall class.
So what do you look for?
And the best essays are the ones where students are able to tell us a story in the word limit that we've attached to it. There is an assignment as part of the essay. Can you accomplish this in the space we've asked you to use? In which they're able to tell us a story or write an essay that in some way introduces us to them and tells us something that's important about them to us. So that if we were actually in a one-on-one meeting, if they felt like they told us that information and shared that story with us, we would learn something important. The essay really is a student's opportunity to go directly from who they are to the admissions person without interpretation in between. The recommendations that are included in the application are written about the student by somebody who knows them well, but it's somebody else's expression and choice of words and choice of examples. And so the student's essay really is the opportunity to say, I want to tell this about myself, and I think you'll know me better if you read it. And it's also an important opportunity for us to assess their writing skills.
And yeah, I think from our end, from the high school perspective, encouraging students to use their own voice, be themselves in the essay, and not try to be telling the college something the college will want to hear, to really let their own personality come through.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Anne in Scarborough. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is regarding AP tests. Lots of students, especially stronger students, are encouraged to take AP tests. And I'm just wondering how the college administrative representatives you have on your panel view that in terms of its usefulness in assessing an application, and what advantages students really have in that regard.
Okay, Rob and Larry, first of all, can you just briefly explain what an AP test is?
It's the test at the conclusion of an advanced placement course. And in advising students, we certainly emphasize their performance in the course versus the test itself. And if an AP course is the appropriate level for them, then the course itself is of far more value than the score on the exam.
John, Robin, AP tests?
I have some personal experience we were sharing before we went live that my son is involved in AP courses now, and you know, one of the institutions he's looking at won't honor the credit for the major he's interested in, engineering. But the importance, I think, is the rigor, is really a student challenging him or herself through the AP coursework. They just approach such an intensity and rigor in their academic preparation that it makes them more ready for college level work anyway, regardless of the score. And yes, if the institution honors a certain score on that AP exam, then they can get a jump start with some credit. But there is value in and of itself, which is why I think Maine has really pushed more AP credit, AP courses in the schools, because rigor and relevance makes them more ready when they do enter.
Let's talk about the interview process. My recollection was, these many years ago, that was the most nerve-wracking part of it, was the face-to-face interview. Robin, how important is a face-to-face interview with someone from the college, either in admissions or an alumnus or alumni? Is that an important part? Do you require it?
Bowdoin does not require admission interviews, although we do offer them and try to make them available to anybody who would like to have one. We do interview students on campus, and we interview students from May through the beginning of December. And those interviews on campus are either with a staff person like myself or with one of our team members who are seniors at Bowdoin who do interviews for us as well. We also have a whole fleet of alumni interviewers around the country and the world who will do interviews for students who can't get to campus. Again, this is an optional part of the application process. It isn't required. Students aren't discounted for not having completed it. But it is a really wonderful way for a student to be three-dimensional, to have a conversation with somebody who knows Bowdoin really well, so they can present themselves and the things about them that they think are really important. They're not meant to be frightening, although I think they often carry a lot of anxiety for the student. But they are meant to be introductory conversations that can be very helpful in understanding the whole person in an application.
1-800-399-3566. Let me just follow up on that, though. If you do get an interview schedule, doesn't that show that the student is interested in Bowdoin and not simply applying to, you know, 15 different schools?
I think that absolutely the pursuit of information about an institution demonstrates an interest in learning more about the institution. And that's an important part of a student really investigating where they think they might be a great fit for a college. And so it's as important for the student to take that step of learning more information as it is for the college to learn about the student. That said, I think it's very important for students to understand that it may not be practical to visit every college where they would like to do a thorough investigation, and they might not be able to get an interview on the day that they're there, and not every college may have an alumni option available. And so to really, at least for Bowdoin, take heart in the fact that this is an optional part of the application process. It's usually quite beneficial to the student. Students usually do a great job in their interviews, and we really enjoy meeting them. But to not feel anxiety about not having the opportunity to pursue an interview with our school.
Robin, do you encourage kids to set up interviews, and indeed, do they rehearse them? Or
I do encourage students to seek out interviews as a chance to put themselves in front of an admissions rep and really demonstrate that they could be a good fit for that culture or school community, and try to reassure them that it really is a conversation. It's not a list of questions, that the feedback from all of our students has always been very positive, that the admissions reps make it a very comfortable experience, that they've left with a sense of relief that it was much more enjoyable, much less intense than they anticipated it would be.
John, are interviews a part of UMaine Augusta application?
It's important for, I think, a student to understand what they're getting into, you know, and that's so start this conversation. I liked what Whitney said, that to come to the campus to engage with either an admissions person or perhaps a faculty member, you know, it doesn't have to be someone in the admissions office, but to visit and to present your questions, to engage in this process. I mean, they're in the driver's seat. This is their education. So, yes, we encourage campus visits. It can be done through an open house, but conversations with someone from the campus is really helpful for the student themselves.
1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Emily in Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a question about grade point average.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just wondering the weight that they have when a student is applying to college, because, you know, my GPA isn't the highest, but there are other parts of my application that, you know, I think made me look better. So I was just wondering if, you know, say at Bowdoin, do they see a grade point average of, you know, like an 89, and do they just throw that in a pile, or do they really consider other things more at this point, even at really selective schools?
So I think the question was directed toward Bowdoin, and what I can say is that one of the things that we work really hard to do is to read each application thoroughly and to really understand every part of the material that comes in for a student. So GPA is certainly part of that, and one of the things that we're really looking for relative to a student's grade point average is the level of coursework that they chose to take relative to what was available in a particular high school, and that really can vary from school to school. There are some schools that don't offer levels at all, and there are others that offer many different levels. But what we're really looking for is to see whether or not a student has pushed themselves to reasonable limits of learning. It shows some initiative on their part. It shows a willingness to take some reasonable risks and an enjoyment with learning. And so what we're hoping to see is students who are taking a rigorous course load and doing well in that course load. We don't typically get to a point in an application and see something that doesn't look as strong as some other candidates and set it aside and move on. We really do move through each piece of the material and try to get a sense of the whole person and what their contribution might be like.
Emily, does that make you feel better?
Yes, that makes me feel much better. And what about at UMaine Augusta?
Well, I think GPA at a place like Augusta, being, again, this is a public university with an access-oriented mission, it's a reflection of preparation to enter the coursework to the program that you're interested in. And so looking at particularly math and English science, if someone's interested in an allied health or science career, those kinds of courses are going to matter. Certainly the level of the GPA, you know, when you're applying to a highly selective private liberal arts college, perhaps in New England, it's going to be a different game, if you will, than it would be applying to a lesser selective public institution, which has, as part of its mission, more access. But what will matter is certain programs. If you're looking at a nursing program or the medical laboratory technology, very important to have strong GPA and science background. And it is still the middle of the process in many cases, because it reflects someone's experience over her or his span of high school.
1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Karen in Cape Nettic. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What's your question?
Well, my question is, I'm not sure it's quite right for your panel, but I graduated in college in the 1980s, and I'm going back to get my master's in social work. And when I was in school, we could take either math or biology. So I avoided math, took straight biology, got straight A's, and now I'm facing the USM qualifications, and they say that I have to take this Accuplacer test in order to matriculate. And my question is, in listening to the discussions regarding Bowdoin and whether or not they even look at SATs, I'm kind of feeling like I'm being put under the microscope at USM, because social work only requires two math-like classes. One is statistics, which I've already taken as an undergrad, and the other one is macroeconomics. And before they will take me as a matriculating student, I need to pass this arcane test called the AccuPlacer, which tells them whether or not I can do double-digit division algebra and geometry, which will not be of any use to me in my career as a social worker. So I'm just wondering if any of the panel could comment on transferring students, you know, adult students. It really seems to be they've thrown up a block to me getting started. They won't matriculate me until I take this test.
Karen, let's let our guests get in here, because we are seeing people who've established in careers or changing careers, getting into college. It's not all high school seniors. Are they facing barriers?
Well, I want to assure you, you would not be the only adult in Maine who has avoided mathematics at the undergraduate level. We see dozens and dozens of them at the University of Maine at Augusta. In fact, our average age is 31 of our student population. And so we have many adults who need refresher math courses to advance into the other courses to complete their degree. It's also important to understand that while you may not directly be using those perhaps in an MSW, indirectly the notion of having an educated person, a well-rounded academic background, is really important. And in fact, most undergraduate degrees today require some level of mathematics, whether it be statistics or college algebra or something to that effect. It's essential. And so I don't see it as a barrier. This test, the AccuPlacer, is actually very well grounded. It's a nationally recognized test put out by the College Board, and it does assess readiness for math. So there may be some developmental coursework that would be needed so that you can get through the statistics and macro. I think I would definitely talk to the admissions office there and find out more about how you can get through that. But be assured, I think that many adults face this. It feels like an impediment, but rather they're looking at this as becoming you're representing a graduate from that program someday, and they want to be sure that you've got that background.
We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions, and we'll talk about the costs of attending college. Please stay with us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Mitt Romney says he pays a tax rate near 15%. Nice if you can get it. We'll look at a controversial proposal to tax the super rich on their income and their wealth. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point tonight at midnight.
On the next Fresh Air, Mitt Romney's career is in politics and venture capital, and his ancestors' prominent place in the history of the Mormon Church. We talk with Michael Cranish and Scott Hellman of the Boston Globe about their new book, The Real Romney. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Tune in for Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. This is Maine Calling. Today, getting into college. My guests are Whitney Soule, the Director of Admissions at Bowdoin College, John Henry, Vice President of Enrollment Services at the University of Maine at Augusta, and Robin Larry, Senior Placement Counselor at Scarborough High School. Cost. We hear about it all the time. And the one debate I hear often in the hallways here at MPBN is, well, are you going to start saving now for your kids' education, or are you going to play poor? And I guess this is a strategic question, and I'm not sure who wants to field it. But are there merits to both, or is this just a silly debate? Robin.
Always a good plan to put money away and save for college. And I know we have a rep from Bowdoin actually come out and do a great financial aid night for us, and he'll say the same thing. There's always an expectation that there's been some planning and saving for college.
So what do you recommend, a certain type of account?
I don't. I try to stay away from actually the individual advising, but certainly recommend to families that they speak to someone, whether a financial planner, an accountant, someone at the FAME organization, Finance Authority of Maine, to advise them individually. But in the admissions process, also advising students and families to make sure that they have colleges that are financial safeties in their mix of schools, so that in April, as they're looking at all of their packages, their financial aid award packages, when it comes down to what can we afford, there are multiple options on the table.
At Bowdoin, I'm sure you see, and Bowdoin is now, oh, I'm not sure what it is now. It's over 50.
Yes,
I know
it is.
It's over 50. Can a family come to Bowdoin, a middle-class family with not much money put aside because of maybe what happened in 2008 or for whatever reason, and feel as though they can apply, get in, and handle it? Or might they actually have to walk away because you just can't solve that financial problem?
We get asked that question a lot, and I hope that any student and their family who would be interested in Bowdoin would go as far as making an application to the college and filling out the financial aid forms. One of the things that's really important at Bowdoin is the idea of access. And while our tuition is quite expensive, we don't pretend that it isn't, we also have an incredibly committed alumni base who have given a tremendous amount of money to our endowment to support our financial aid. And we have really good financial aid in our financial aid packages. We do not require students to take student loans. So when we are assessing what a family can contribute, it's really looking at the parent's opportunity to contribute, not the student's requirement to also take a student loan. If the student chooses to take a loan to mitigate family expenses, they may do that. But we don't expect that a student would do that, hoping that when students graduate, that none of our Bowdoin students will have loans, that it's an equal playing field for the students as they exit the college.
So the debt, the no debt promises to the student, but it doesn't apply to the family. They might have to.
It doesn't necessarily apply to the family, and I think that the family contribution through the financial aid office is assessed through a pretty detailed process of really trying to understand what the family's ability is to contribute to their child's education. And we really do see it as the family's responsibility to contribute to the education, but the college will also take that responsibility to enroll the students that the admissions office chooses to admit. And that's it's an incredibly important part of the way that Bowdoin operates, knowing that we're an expensive institution, but to be able to enroll the students who we know would be a tremendous fit for our school and that as a collection of a class would be impressive.
How much debt would a graduate, let me put it this way, do you tell a prospective student, if you come to Bowdoin, here's how much you can get, here's how much you may have to borrow, and advise them, but you probably don't want to leave Bowdoin with $35,000 in debt. Is there a magic number that you say, maybe this isn't?
Well, there's a couple ways to answer that question. We really expect that the students will not be graduating with debt because of their education at Bowdoin, that they themselves will have not had to pick up loans, federally subsidized ones or otherwise, to contribute to their education at Bowdoin, that our financial aid commitment is to eliminate that expectation. One thing that can help students and their families, though, is as of this fall, all colleges, private and public in the United States, are required to have a net price calculator on their websites. And that is an opportunity for students and their parents to get on a site at any college and answer the financial questions that are being asked and get a preliminary idea of what they might be expected to contribute in a single year for a student to be able to attend that particular institution. And the net price calculators are new. It's a complicated idea because in many cases financial aid review is very specific to a family. And it's a very one-on-one conversation kind of process to make sure that we understand what a family needs, and you're not going to get that in a calculator online. So we would recommend that when a student or their parents fill out the calculator, that they follow up with the financial aid office if they have concerns about the number that comes back. That said, it is a great way for a student to start to assess what an institution may expect of them or their family in the financial aid process.
And we should mention College Goal Maine, which is, I guess, during the entire month of January and February. There are 12 regional sites, and on Sunday, January 29th, more than 40 local sites. And the goal of this is to talk to help families to talk about financial aid options. And you can get more information at collegegoalsundayusa.org. That's a website with all the information on there. And we thought we would mention that. Yes, go ahead, Ron.
I was going to say, in addition to the college perspective on financial aid and paying for college, it's equally as important for families to research the financial end of each college in addition to the admissions piece to know whether the college offers merit scholarships or is just need-based. How much of the student aid they'll actually meet. It varies greatly. Some colleges will only meet 65%, others will meet upwards of 90%. So they need to do their homework on that end of the picture as well. Sure.
Let's go to David in Brunswick. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yes, what's your question?
Well, it's not really a question. It's a comment, I believe. I used to be on the board of Bowdoin College Assistant Secretary, and the average financial aid award was in the neighborhood of $32,000 or $33,000. So in effect, it can be no more expensive to go to a Bowdoin than a public institution. And some of the rewards are more and some are less, but I do think students should apply and apply for financial aid and see what happens. The vast majority of students today will apply for financial aid at a school like Bowdoin College.
Yeah, is it your sense, though, that some students are just assume that there's no way, so they don't bother?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake.
Sure. All right. David, thank you. John Henry, I'm wondering, you know, with all, in some ways, all this hype, the talk about the cost, the debt, does that help schools like UMaine-Augusta in some sense, who are perceived as being more affordable and accessible and maybe having two-year options instead of four-year options?
Indeed, it does. You know, not every student who applies to a selective college or university can get in. That's why they're called selective. That's sort of why that term exists. And so the vast majority of students who may not make it through that process and may not be eligible to enter that institution can find a public institution quite accessible. And remember, we already receive support from the state of Maine, so that support helps us. We have a challenge in Maine, which is for a great number of students, they're just not going through the process. We don't have an aspirational issue in Maine about getting to college. Students have aspirations. It's a planning issue. And Melmac Foundation has pointed this out for years, that we need to get students to complete the paperwork. I think I saw a statistic yesterday that from FAME that only 58% of students in Maine complete the FAFSA, the Federal Financial Aid Form. 58%, so that's 42% that aren't even completing that form, so that automatically they cannot be considered for federal aid programs.
Yeah, I'm amazed that we went almost 45 minutes without the word FAFSA being mentioned. But just real quickly, what is the FAFSA and why is it such an important document?
Sure. The FAFSA is the Title IV, there's a federal term, required form to be considered for federal financial aid programs. It stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. It is required for all students to complete so that they can be considered for Pell Grants, which is the free money, or campus-based grants called SEOG, supplemental grants, and of course the loan programs and work-study jobs as well. Without that, no institution, public or private, that is certified to receive these federal aid funds can award aid to a student. So it is critical. It is the first step. In addition, other campuses may require a second form or something called an institutional form or the profile, which is another form that looks more deeply at families' ability or opportunity to contribute, I think was Whitney's word. And that's an important thing to consider. Remember, the philosophy behind federal aid is the family's responsibility first to fund college. And then financial aid kicks in when that ability is diminished through family resources or other.
So the takeaway message is here, it can be done. Don't be scared by what you hear on the radio.
And College Goal Sunday is a terrific opportunity. They will actually be completing FAFSAs with families on that day.
And we have a link to that information on our Facebook page as well. We're out of time. Thank you, all three of you, for this conversation. It was really enlightening. Whitney Soul, Director of Admissions for Bowdoin College, John Henry, Vice President of Enrollment Services at the University of Maine at Augusta, and Robin Larry, Senior Placement Counselor at Scarborough High School. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Lindsay Maynard ran the board, and our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We also had help from Rich Tozier and the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of Maine Calling by visiting mpbn.net and click on the radio tab. Join us again Tuesday for a conversation about the upcoming Chinese New Year and the growing population of Chinese residents in Maine. I'm Keith Shortall. This has been Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.